You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
Welcome back. I remind you, of course, here we are, November the 16th, 2022, and we are live streaming as I speak. When we're on the air live, we're always live streaming at rumble.com. Yes, we were on YouTube, but they didn't like what we had to say, and they shut us down. Bah, bah, bah. But go to rumble.com, enter in Larry Connors, USA in the search engine. One word, it'll take you right to the studio. I see many of you are watching now, and I often see that many of you end up watching later in the day. It's your pleasure. That's fine. Let others know about it, by the way, so they can join and watch as well. And, of course, you can subscribe for free. We'll make sure it gets delivered to your email every day, and you can pick it up when you're ready. Same thing on our podcast at LarryConnorsUSA.com. So, last night, down at Palm Beach, Florida, at Mar-a-Lago, former President Trump announced his third campaign for the White House. 69-minute address, which I would say went a little too long, and many there that were so excited at the beginning, apparently they were looking a little bored and distracted at the end. That was not good. But he did make some strong points. He said, we're going to have a national greatness agenda because our country can be greater than it's ever been. He also pointed out, you think it's been bad the last 2 years? It's going to get worse before I can get into office again. That I would agree with. And then right after that, today, this morning, I should say, it came out yesterday, just in advance of that, I should point out, the Politico Morning Consult poll did a survey, and they looked at Donald Trump against Ron DeSantis based upon knowing that he was going to make the announcement last night. Trump holds a 14-point lead over DeSantis in that potential matchup at this time. 47% of Republicans and Republican-leaning independents back Trump. 33% support DeSantis. Mike Pence, a distant third at 5%. Now, again, this was taken just before the speech last night, and we're so far out from the election, it's almost meaningless, but I was going to share it with you. We do see that the House is now in the control of the Republicans, and that happened with the win in the 3rd Congressional District in California. Thank God that happened. Kevin Kiley winning. He was Trump's choice in California's 3rd Congressional District. He won, so that then gives Republicans control of the House. Senate still up for grabs in as far as if we're going to be behind or even again, and that comes down to Georgia. The 6th of next month in the runoff between Senator Warnock and, of course, Herschel Walker. But also the House Republicans today, as you probably heard on the network news, decided to elect Minority Whip Steve Scalise, Republican of Louisiana, to serve as their majority leader in the House moving forward. I think that's a good decision. On the Republican side, not such a good decision, in my opinion. Several senators, led by Senator Cruz, wanted to delay any leadership election until that December 6th Georgia runoff was over, but others wanted to rush forward and elect Senate Mitch McConnell once again as their leader. And House Republican Senatorial Committee Chairman Rick Scott had said he wanted to replace McConnell, but it did not work out. He's not going to make it, and McConnell's back in. So on this morning's MSNBC morning show, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen was asked about, when do you think we're going to see inflation get better? Her words, and I'm quoting, her words, inflation will come back down toward normal levels we're accustomed to over the next couple of years. And this is distressing. In D.C., Cardinal Gregory has canceled the yearly youth rally and Mass for Life held in conjunction with the March for Life. The Archdiocese said the cancellation was difficult, but decided that we're not going to do it. You're not supporting the youth rally for life? Department of Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas admits, I cannot guarantee that no convicted criminals are among the roughly 2 million border crossers, illegals getting into our country. We got a great piece on that coming up before we wrap up today when he gets into some arguments, basically, with a member of Congress. The Chinese Communist Party has yet to open the Disney Shanghai Resort. I know you really want to go. They shut it down October 31 because of COVID. They had one visitor proved positive, and they said, shut it all down. There is government control.
Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
Your eyes are burning, you're sneezing, it's allergy season. Pollen readings are sky high. Heck, you can even see that yellow powder on everything. So that's also inside your air conditioning ducts. I suggest you call Wellington Environmental. Now, other companies will be glad to do the job, but they're going to come to your home or business, count the air ducts, and begin increasing the cost. In fact, the quoted price might even double. Wellington offers one price, no extras. You'll be charged exactly what Wellington quotes. So this is easy for you. Call 314-644-4930, 644-4930. You will breathe easier. Wellington has a AAA rating with the Better Business Bureau. 314-644-4930, 644-4930. Wellington Environmental, your world cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington.
I want to thank my friends at John Bill Roofing for sponsoring this segment of Larry Connors USA. John Bill Roofing, covering homes, businesses throughout the Midwest with the best quality, lowest price. John Bill Roofing. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Had me a girl, taught me those things a young man should know.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
In order to make America great and glorious again, I am tonight announcing my candidacy for President of the United States.
And that is how it began at Mar-a-Lago last night as President Trump announced, I am running again for 2024. A simple question for you. Maybe two. Do you think it's a good decision that he run again or a bad decision? And coupled with that, question number two, will you vote for him or against him this time? I just read in the news and commentary about a morning consult poll, which was put together just before his announcement last night and taken over 2 days prior to even yesterday, and basically saying that DeSantis would have a strong lead. I'm sorry, let me correct that. Trump would have a strong lead over DeSantis based on this morning consult poll. Let me get the exact numbers. I never like citing numbers off the top when I've got them here in front of me, and I want to be right. It shows that Trump holds a 14-point lead over DeSantis. This is a Politico Morning Consult poll released yesterday, and it was taken the 2 days prior to that. And this is all with knowledge that Trump was going to make this announcement. It already indicated, of course, prior to the midterms he was going to be doing it, but he didn't want to do anything in advance of the midterms. And some were saying it's probably a good idea. He doesn't mess with it and they go through it. Then he could come in and say, look what we've done. Well, he couldn't really do that last night. He couldn't come in and say, look what we've done. It's also to the point where he had to almost say, look what we failed to do. He did try to make the most of it, try to put a little silver lining on it, and saying, for one thing, Nancy Pelosi is no more. Now, that is true. Congressman Kevin Kiley in the 3rd Congressional District of California ended up winning, and that was at least the one seat we had to have in the House for Republicans to control it. There are still other seats yet to be decided. But that one apparently put us over the top anyway. How many more will we get? But that's, you got to put in contrast the fact that almost all the indications were prior to the actual midterm election one that we will see 40 to maybe as many as 50 Republicans gain seats in the House, that they'd be that much far ahead of the Democrats. Even Newt Gingrich, who you had to classify as a knowledgeable source and understanding all this, I think he put the number above 40, 43 maybe. And when it came to the Senate, he was even talking about 3, maybe 5 seats. Some were saying maybe it could go 7. Well, the Senate's not yet decided. Right now, it's still in favor of the Democrats. The seat undecided right now is the one they're going to have the runoff on in Georgia, the 6th the next month, between Senator Raphael Warnock and Herschel Walker. And Walker's been under vicious attack, and it's going to increase. The money that's been put into that state to demonize him will accelerate. And if the Republicans don't show up, and if they don't put money into that campaign as fierce as the Democrats are, it's going to stand with Warnock, and they will have control of the Senate, which means you're going to have a divided Congress. You're not getting much of anything done. It'll be full gridlock almost, which means Biden can't really do anything unless he wants to try his executive order, and that could be done and then challenged by court and finally worked out maybe by the time he's out of office. You do have to worry about what can be accomplished over the next 2 years if we're that divided. Now, if Republicans controlled both houses and Biden's still in the White House, there'd still be gridlock. And as he was asked when it appeared that's the way it was going to go, Biden's response was, things are going to be more difficult. Well, I want to make them more difficult on some of the things he has in mind. I want us to get back to energy independence, which we had under Trump. And so for that reason, I want to see him running. I want to see him win, or him or DeSantis. I think the best combination, in my humble opinion, would be that he and DeSantis team up. They run, they would capture everything, and then Trump, after a couple of years, would decide he's out, DeSantis will take over for those last 2 years, and then DeSantis can run for 2 terms. There's been talk, though, that Trump is looking at McCarthy of California. That's not going to add really that many votes or support. You're not going to get a lot of votes for Trump out of California. You know you'd get them out of Florida. And if it comes down between the two of them, between DeSantis and Trump in a primary, at this point, despite what the Morning Consult poll said, I'm not sure Trump would have that kind of lead or would win at all. I wouldn't have any problem with DeSantis being in place because they have the same mindset. The problem primarily is Trump's ego. Yes, DeSantis has one too. And you have to have an ego to run for such positions in office. You got to believe you're the best of the best of the best. Why do you think I'm sitting here? I think I'm the best of the best of the best. Oh, by the way, let me give you a little clue. If Quentin, my director, ever decides, hey, let's do some hoops together, you do not want to get on the court with him. He says he controls the ball, he's going to run the court on you and everything, and I'm not going to get on the court to find out. I'll just accept his word for it. So you can accept my word that I am the best of the best of the best. And other stations and other people in town are beginning to pick up on that, and it's thanks to you, not me. I am very blessed, and I'm glad to have this program. So back to Trump making his statement last night. Major Garrett, CBS reporter, was there to cover it, and he said one of the things he's relying on that should be a plus but could also be a detriment, and that is the Trump brand.
Trump celebrated administration accomplishments on economic growth, tax cuts, border control, and defense spending.
I made big promises to the American people, and unlike other presidents, I kept my promises. I kept them.
The question, is the Republican Party generally sold on Trump policies, still buying the Trump brand?
This is just too much drama and too much problems.
Is this the most wounded Donald Trump has been?
It certainly is the most wounded Donald Trump has been. Last Tuesday could not have been worse for him.
Now, again, those are comments of those you would expect to be on the other side. Democrats quickly going on the offensive, saying that, don't forget, January 6th. They're never going to let that go down. I've told you that. That will live longer than a cockroach, I promise you. Lawrence O'Donnell of MSNBC pointed out that Trump has made history because he has now filed that he's running as president earlier than anyone ever has in history. And O'Donnell says, I know why.
This is not about running for president. This is about something else. It is well documented that Donald Trump's first campaign for president was not about becoming president. It was a desperate campaign to increase his fame with no plan or expectation to win anything other than more money as a television performer. Tonight's announcement by Donald Trump that he is a candidate for president again is like the last time he announced he was running for president, actually about something other than running for president. This is Donald Trump's attempt to run away from prosecutors by running for president.
So, in Lawrence O'Donnell's opinion, the only reason Trump announced as early as he did, not to be president again, not to make our country great again, not to lower your gas prices, bring down inflation, to restore energy independence and all the rest of the stuff that came with it, is to avoid prosecution, Lawrence O'Donnell explaining in more detail.
Donald Trump is the very first candidate, announced candidate for president in history, who is a former president under two federal grand jury criminal investigations and at least one state criminal grand jury investigation in the state of Georgia. That's the candidacy that was announced tonight, the triple grand jury candidacy of Donald Trump. Donald Trump made this announcement at the very moment when the pause is over.
The pause. Well, the pause we're going to explain here in a moment, but again, just because he's indicted and charged doesn't mean a thing, period. But Lawrence O'Donnell is using it as his launch point that he is not a political man. He's simply a criminal, a fugitive on the run. Well, that's on MSNBC. On CNN, Anderson Cottonmouth was talking to Congressman Jamie Raskin, Democrat of Maryland, who served on the January 6th committee, and raised this question.
If he is making this in part believing that this will somehow protect him from investigations or indictments, is that accurate, do you think?
No, it's absolutely wrong. In fact, the people who made that point most emphatically were his defenders in the Senate during the second impeachment trial, who said that the proper way to deal with a former president who has engaged in criminality is to prosecute him rather than to impeach him if he's already left office.
Now, again, that's assuming he's involved in what were the words that Raskin used exactly? That if he's engaged in criminality, that's an assumption. It's not a proven fact. But what do we don't let the words interfere with a good narrative, right? Not when you're on the left. Back to Congressman Raskin and his explanation.
Under our Constitution, we don't have an office of former president of the United States. A former president of the United States is just a citizen. And the highest office in our land is that of citizen, not president and not former president. So you don't have a right to commit murder as a president or embezzlement or bribery or seditious conspiracy or attacks on federal proceedings or what have you. So he can still be tried. I think the Department of Justice has been clear about that. All that matters is the facts of the case and the law.
Well, I wouldn't be so quick to say that either if you're looking at facts of the case of the law. So-called Russian collusion, the facts of that case. And how Raskin can, and he is right in the sense that he's still a citizen when he leaves office and he can be prosecuted, but he throws in things like I just said, embezzlement. I wonder if Joe Biden was listening to that. Bribery, huh? Seditious conspiracy, huh? And he also even added in, you don't have a right to commit murder. Well, of course you don't. It is amazing to me, absolutely amazing, how the left can just grab onto these words, suck them up, and stick them to the glass and say, see, that's what I'm talking about. When their glass they're sticking it to has already been smeared all over with the mud of the Hunter Biden laptop escapades and allegations and documentations between Hunter Biden on behalf of Daddy and everything he got. And if, and you, when you have an investigation around and you know, okay, you go to a crime scene and someone said, someone broke this window, we need to investigate it. Okay. And over here's a body. What are you going to investigate first? The one that's right here, the body? Or, well, we can't investigate the window break-in. Let's look at that. Give me a break. Coming up, another member of the leftists talk about how Trump is so toxic.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at LarryConnorsUSA.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
The timing of Trump's announcement is awfully interesting because if there had been a genuine red wave, this would have been politically smart, right? He would have taken credit for it. The wind would be at his back. He would get in before his opponents. He would beat the Department of Justice. But given the fact that he's got this big loser label slapped on his forehead, the announcement tomorrow makes a lot less sense. And so it's going to be interesting to see how Republicans react and whether finally, after all of these years and all of these outrages, they decide to turn the page. And until they do, I guess I'm still skeptical.
That would be the comment from Charlie Sykes. He's editor of Bulwark. Bulwark, I should say. Identifying itself as a center-right news and opinion position. And that Trump, he said, has a loser label on his forehead. Like, are you watching me on, if you're watching on Rumble right now, you see that. Is that correct? Is that the right? Or is that, I had to turn and look. I'm a loser too, I guess. I don't know. Bottom line is, part of what he said is right. And if Trump came in after a big tsunami, red tsunami, and everything that was being predicted, then he'd say, look what we did, and we can go all the way now. He's having to come in now and say it was a disappointment. He acknowledged that last night. He said, disappointment. He said, but we did win the House back, which they did, and Nancy Pelosi's out of a job. I think we can all applaud that, most of us. But the Democrats went on the attack immediately. Immediately. There was a video that was released immediately, while he was still on stage, President Biden releasing a video on Twitter firing back. The video concludes after attacking Trump on abortion, of course, the Roe v. Wade decision, and attacking him on the economy. I don't know where they think Trump failed on the economy. Do you? Are you making more money now but not able to buy as much? That would be inflation. Are you not making as much money? Are your gas prices higher than what they were? I don't know where it's mixed messaging again from the left, which you can expect. And attacking him on, oh, here it is again. Here's that cockroach. January 6th. I told you they're going to beat you over the head with that thing forever, never, 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 never. And the video concludes by saying, Trump failed America. A reporter is asking Biden and the French President Macron at the Group of 20 in Indonesia, you have a reaction to Trump's announcement tonight in Mar-a-Lago? They shared a faint smile, and Biden said, not really. And Macron, being French, in French, said, oh, no, you don't expect me to do that, do you? I can't speak French. Come on. I'd murder it. It'd be with a Texas accent and a bit of Mexican language, Hispanic, thrown in there. So I can't. Basically, and I'm glad I can tell you that Macron stayed silent. Good. I got out of that one. I was worried about that. And the Democrat National Committee chair wrote on Twitter, Donald Trump was a failure as president. That's why he lost in 2020. It's why he will lose again. And then she, in a separate tweet, pointed out that Fox News even broke away from the speech before it concluded, saying the announcement was, quote, low energy. Now, that's what we had heard earlier from Major Garrett, CBS News, saying it all started off great, but as it went on and on and on and on, the crowd began to, you know, not as loud and cheering as much. Every speaker should learn that. When you begin to lose your audience, they're not responding, shut it off. I don't think Trump is aware of that, and that I wish he would. You got Congresswoman DeGette of Colorado tweeting, you can sum up Trump's announcement tonight in one word, desperation. So the gloves are off. We're in for a real good fist fight going forward, regardless. I just want to see the party hold together and the strengths we do have. And I've got a guest coming up saying that Washington, the Washington elites, would be very wise to remember 2016. My guest coming up.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
For some companies, loyalty is a lost word. You give a company your business, your years, but in the end, you're just a number. But at Ackerman Toyota, loyalty is appreciated. Thousands of customers personally know this. New Ackerman customers quickly see it. Loyalty defines Ackerman Toyota. For all customers and employees, Ackerman Toyota at Hampton and 44. Ackerman Toyota for life.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Welcome back, my guest. We've had on numerous times before and always glad to have him. One of the correspondents for The Federalist, Tristan Justice. Glad to have you back, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm looking at a piece that you titled, Trump Running Again, and basically Washington would be wise to remember 2016. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I think there's this knee-jerk reaction again to write off Donald Trump as some type of caricature that has no chance at winning the Republican nomination, let alone the White House again. But I really think our Beltway media class is falling into that trap from 2015 with that same mentality of writing off Trump as some type of underdog, when in reality, Trump still remains one of the most, if not the most popular Republican in the country, one of the most popular Republicans in the country. His poll numbers might have slipped a little bit to support of Governor Ron DeSantis for the Republican nomination, but he's still leading in just about every single poll. He has led every single poll for the 2024 nomination to date.
Well, you do know that this political morning consult poll just came out saying that this prior to the speech last night that Trump has a 14-point lead over DeSantis. But how meaningful are polls at this point?
Well, that's an open question. I think polling is I think the golden era of polling is behind us at this point. But I do think they still offer us a general window of where the public is on this. Now, I just think Americans and especially Washington would be wise to remember the lessons learned from 2015, where it was this time last in that cycle that Jeb Bush, another popular governor of Florida, had all the support of the establishment characters and even a $100 million war chest to go for the presidency. And yet he was out of the race after South Carolina, and months later, Donald Trump was president elect. And so I just think Washington should be careful about writing off Donald Trump, even if the circumstances this year are far different.
And when you say Washington, you're not just talking about the left, you're talking about Mitch McConnell and goes like that, which Mitch did get reelected as minority Senate leader, despite Senator Cruz and others trying to say, let's wait until the Georgia election is over.
Absolutely. In fact, I would say especially the conservative elites need to be careful about writing off Donald Trump. Because remember, it's not necessarily what Washington wants when we talk about these presidential elections. It's what the voters want. It's what the people in Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, Ohio, all these other important primary states. It's really what the voters want, not what Washington wants. And so I think our elite class needs to be very careful about writing off Donald Trump, especially since he's not the preferred candidate of many in the Beltway.
Well, I will agree, and I've made it clear to my audience in the beginning with what do we have, 15, 17 GOP candidates. It wasn't my first, second, or even third. The decision, though, when it came Trump and Hillary, then there was no decision. But when he came down those stairs, the escalator, the elevator the first time, he was unknown as a political operative, but certainly known publicly by TV and things of that nature. So I could see why at that point they might write him off, but you think they would have learned something this last time around, huh?
Exactly, and I think the Washington establishment wants to write off Trump, not just because a lot of them think that he might not have a chance this time, but that they don't want him to have a chance this time. So remember, any time Mitch McConnell and his allies in Washington complain about candidate quality, what they're really complaining about is they're complaining about the Republican voters, and they're complaining about the Republican base voters and who they pick to represent them and run in these critical races. It's not about the candidates. It's about the voters. And so whenever you hear about Mitch McConnell and all these other Beltway Republicans complaining that we had bad candidates this election cycle, they're really complaining about the voters and who they chose, and they're making the same mistakes as they made in 2015 or 2016.
You're listening to Tristan Justice, a correspondent for The Federalist. You quote in here a woman that he picked on in a debate, made a remark about her that later he tried to say, well, I didn't mean what you think of me. And I was one of the ones that said, we know what you meant, either own it or apologize. That was his remarks about Megyn Kelly bleeding from all over. But Megyn Kelly, if you got her quoted in here, is saying, I think Trump sucks up all the energy in every room, no matter what.
And I think she's exactly right, no matter how last week went. So I think Donald Trump, he's a domineering figure in the party, and he's a domineering figure in the country. And so I think writing him off would be a huge mistake, and I think it's just going to alienate the Republican base the harder that, it's interesting. Trump is one of the people where the harder the establishment goes against him, the harder his base goes for him. And, I mean, I remember back in the 2015 Republican primary, he constantly had that 30% support. And he rode that support through the entire contest and just kept growing and growing and growing. And so I think Washington is about to make the same mistake simply because they want another candidate to lead the Republican Party. And so I think Republicans, what they need to do going into this primary is respect the will of the voters, listen to what the voters want and adhere to that, and just let the voters decide, let the primary play itself out. We have all these institutions set up for a reason. And let the voters decide at the end of the day who they want to represent them. If that happens to be Donald Trump, and it happens to be Donald Trump.
Well, then, to that extent, what do you think Trump has learned that would benefit him this time? Because I found it interesting, in the 69 minutes last night, he never said MAGA, Make America Great Again. He went with the unveiling National Greatness Agenda, and that's only because those on the left have slurred and slandered the word MAGA as if that's a bad thing to make America great again, but they're trying to couch Trump and the MAGA people as dangerous to, quote, the democracy when they mean our republic. What do you think he's learned from this?
Well, I think Donald Trump has something that no other candidate who's going to run for president in 2024 has. I mean, Donald Trump has 4 years in the Oval Office to run on. He has a record to run on. He has a record that just about everyone who's going to run against him on stage is also at some point going to have to defend, considering they were either whether they were a senator who voted with Trump's agenda or whether they were someone who just complimented his presidency in the past and supported him in 2020. And so Trump is going into this race, and he's going to be able to say, you know, I was president for 4 years. Remember how the great things were under my leadership. You could afford gas and groceries in the same paycheck. Our border was secure. And the world wasn't on brink of nuclear catastrophe. And this, and of course, the world hasn't been this close to a nuclear conflict since the Cuban Missile Crisis. And so I think Trump can make a very strong case to voters that America was thriving during his time as president. 2024 is not going to be about COVID like 2020 was to a large degree. 2024 is going to be about a whole host of different issues, just like every different election cycle is. And I think Donald Trump has a strong case to make. And voters are probably going to listen to that. So no matter who the Beltway establishment is going to back, no matter how much they write him off again, no matter how strong those political headwinds come from Washington, New York, and the East LA corridor, I think Donald Trump is going to come out swinging in this primary, and he will very likely go very far. But of course, we are we're not even a few weeks after these midterms, and so I think we're just going to have to let the election process play out.
Well, Lawrence O'Donnell of MSNBC was pointing out last night that Trump has made history by filing as early as he did, the first presidential candidate ever to file this early out, and he's doing it because it's after the pause in the sense that there's no candidacy, no election or anything under, and so that he wants to get in and declare as a candidate, so maybe he won't be under additional indictments and prosecution and things of this nature. Do you see that figuring into his decision this early?
Well, I do think Donald Trump wanted to kind of put the FBI in a corner in terms of making it much harder to indict him. I mean, Trump's indictment has always been the top policy item on the Democrats' agenda ever since he came down the golden escalator in 2015. They started with the Russia hoax, sure, trying to claim he was some type of agent of the Kremlin. When that failed, they moved on to this made-up scandal about Ukraine. That was the first impeachment. And when that fell apart, they just moved on to January 6th as if giving a peaceful speech at the White House somehow triggered some riot at the Capitol that happened before he had even finished speaking. And so there's always this cascade of efforts from the Democrats to try to land Trump's indictment because he's become public enemy number one. So I do think Donald Trump's announcement is going to make it a lot harder for the FBI to indict him, considering they would be indicting a political opponent who is very likely or has a very good chance of being president again.
You point out that he might have been a wrecking ball in 2016, but he's got a lot of barriers still to wreck. And then you also quote the New York Post is publishing DeSantis on the cover as the future. In other words, not even the supposedly friendly media is lining up at this point.
Well, DeSantis still could be the future. I mean, there's no doubt that DeSantis was a clear winner in the midterms. The red wave hit Florida where it didn't hit anywhere else. And remember, DeSantis only won by a couple thousand votes in just 4 years ago. And last week he won by 20 points. And Florida has been a swing state for decades now. And so I think DeSantis has a lot going for him in terms of chasing the Republican nomination that no one else in the country has, even Trump. Trump could still be a wrecking ball. I think Trump is just going to have different barriers he's going to have to run through.
To that point, and I'm sorry to rush you, but in the last 10 seconds, can he control his ego?
We'll have to wait and see.
Good way out, Tristan. Tristan Justice, always glad to have you on board, sir.
Thank you for having me.
We'll do it again. Tristan Justice with The Federalist. Coming up, our Department of Homeland Security Secretary admits, I have no idea how many coming in this country are illegals and criminals and bad people. I don't know.
You can follow Larry on Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Yeah.
is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Now, can you answer definitively with data backing up your answer that none of the 600,000 individuals who are now in the United States amongst our communities that got away are gang members or criminals?
Your question highlights precisely why we have sought to prioritize national security and public safety threats.
I'm so glad to hear you say
that. Immigration and Customs Enforcement.
I'm really glad to hear you say that.
Efforts.
I'm going to have to reclaim my time because I've got a lot to get through. So, as you know, probably then, in fiscal year 22, CBP arrested nearly 30,000 illegals attempting to enter the country who were previously convicted of a crime. Now, of those arrested, in just the number, no additional commentary, how many have claimed asylum?
Congresswoman, I'll have to get back to you with specific with specific numbers.
Do you not go into a congressional hearing knowing you're going to be asked questions like that and not have the numbers? It's not like they're suddenly ambushing them with how many miles to Mars. We're talking about what your job, your J-O-B, your mission is, and you don't come in with the right numbers. You know why? Because they don't want them to tell you how many. You were listening right then to Congresswoman Kat Kamak of Republican of Florida questioning Department of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. You could tell by his mealy-mouthing wing. Between him and A.G. Garland, I don't know how we understand or get anything done. I really don't. But then they got into a dispute over wording that was found on the immigration website, Department of Homeland Security website, and debating over what the numbers are and what they aren't. I don't have time to let you hear all the exchange, but here's a clip of it.
Based on the information from your website, from your department, officially there have been, of all those encounters, 1.4 million, and that's a conservative number, that your department states have been released into the United States. So I know you guys have done this really fun renaming, rebranding thing, calling it enforcement removal proceedings. But today, in fiscal year 22, you have now released over 1.4 million illegals into the United States. And my question to you now is, can you guarantee that none of those people have criminal records?
This enforcement work is not fun, Congresswoman. This is a noble profession in which people risk their lives to conduct it. And you know that very well.
Oh, the righteous indignation. Here we go.
I love it. The righteous indignation. We all know how dangerous it is. It's you people who don't know, and you don't know how dangerous it is for those you let into the country to the rest of the nation. All right, once again, back to the Congresswoman Kamak trying to get some kind of valuable information out of our Department of Homeland Security Secretary.
You hold the record as Secretary of Homeland Security for the most encounters and subsequent releases into the United States in history. Your own former boss, Secretary Jay Johnson, said that 1,000 a day is considered a crisis. Today we're encountering 7,000 a day. The facts and figures make the point for me. So is the border secure based on your feelings or facts?
Ah. Yeah, that's exactly correct. See, they would tell you it's safe but not secure. Or do they say secure but not safe? I forget. They do change their words. She's right. They do this word game play. And he's, oh, but that's not fun. That's not fun. We have important duties here and everything. Well, then do your duty. Here's what happened yesterday. Texas Governor Abbott posted on social media to declare, quote, I've invoked the invasion clause of the U.S. and Texas Constitution to fully authorize Texas to take unprecedented measures to defend our state against an invasion. She says this refers to Article 1, Section 10 of the U.S. Constitution, which allows states to take military action in the event of ongoing or imminent threat of invasion. Jay Johnson, the former DHS secretary, as you heard the congresswoman say, 1,000 is bad. That's really bad. And she said, we're getting 7,000 a day. That's really a crisis. And what do you, well, I don't know. I don't have all the numbers with me. I don't know. The message that Abbott put out, had 8 specific actions which would be taken. The most notable was the National Guard, already deployed to the border under Operation Lone Star, would, quote, repel and turn back immigrants trying to cross the border illegally. So at present, Texas National Guard members, along with the U.S. Border Patrol, serve as a visual deterrent, but they're not actually engaged in physically preventing illegal crossings. They start a crossing, kind of step aside, let them come on. Except remember when some of the Border Patrol on horses were using their horses and trying to move people back, and they're slapping at their horses with the reins, not trying to whip the Haitians, as is being presented by the left, but trying to get them away from the horse before they can be stepped on and really hurt, or the horse gets spooked and hurt others. This is what we are having to do, they're doing in the state of Texas. Because the Department of Homeland Security Secretary is treasonous. He's violating his oath to preserve and protect this nation, as is President Biden. So, yeah, I want to see some investigations. I want some deep inquiries. I want to see somebody held accountable. Remember our pledge. One nation under God.
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Thank you for listening to Larry Connors, USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.